Greetings, friends. I am Ian McKenzie, host of the Mythic Masculine podcast. And I'm here with my good friend and collaborator, Deus Forche, once again, to offer some announcements for some events that we're putting together, including the next iteration of an immersive men's weekend, which we'll touch on in a second, as well as the first iteration of a new online 3-month program, which we're very excited to talk about. But first, welcome, Deus.
Thanks, Ian. It's really good to be here. Hello, everyone.
So let's talk about the weekend, which is going to be the third iteration of this real deep dive in the cauldron of masculinity, sex, and myth, formerly known as MXM for short. But based on, you know, now running the weekend twice here on Vancouver Island, and also the previous conversation that Deus and I had around that first iteration of this event, where we went deep into actually what emerged for both, you know, us as facilitators, as well as for the men. That conversation, just kind of bubbling from what we talked about, titled it Awakening the Wild Erotic. And somehow I think that kind of stuck in terms of actually feeling into, well, that's actually the whole theme of the weekend itself. And so based on that inspiration that we've decided to actually call the weekend now, no longer MXM, but Awakening the Wild Erotic, Awe, AWE for short, which I actually really love because so much of it, of course, is awakening to awe, awakening to the vitality of life itself, i.e. Eros. And so I'd love for you to share a bit more about, yeah, how that represents for you as well, like capturing a sense of really what the territory is for this immersive weekend.
Sure. The previous title, Masculinity, Sex, and Myth, really covered the territory that we're going to be exploring, but the heart of it, the core of it, is really working with this mysterious force that we call Eros and exploring what that means on a personal level, on a collective level, on an archetypal level. And it really is a ritual experience. We're going into a ceremony, a rite of passage of sorts, and a lot of what unfolds there is actually emergent. We do have structured practices and processes that we're drawing upon, but a lot of what we explore, and this is right in line with erotic energy itself, it's a living exploration of whatever it is that's arising for people as we go into this territory, which is very mythic. It's very emergent, and we wanted that to be reflected in the title. And there's really nothing like what it is that you and I are doing that I've come across in these territories. A lot of the focus of erotic trainings and immersions are largely about exploring sex or tantric practices, way of like improving performance, sexual performance, or going into more spiritual, energetic practices for cultivating sexual energy. But we're taking a much broader and a much deeper approach to exploring Eros as a whole, which certainly flows in and through sexual experiences, but it's a much broader territory than that. If we look at erotic energy as its own force, the force that actually births life in this realm, it is the prime life force that is responsible for all forms of attraction, of arousal, of inspiration, of connection, of contact. And that shows up in so many different ways. And one of the access points that we use to explore that is through the body, these deep body-centered psychotherapeutic practices, community processes, dyads, forum, but also through the mythic lens, exploring archetypes and ancient stories that can connect us all, but also allow us to relate to this material in a very personal way. And so we wanted the title to really reflect the nature of the exploration rather than just the topics that we're going to be exploring.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. And also to be clear that, yes, this is for men this weekend. And that in terms of the masculine archetypes that were put forth by Douglas Gillette and Robert Moore in the book King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, which any men who have been exploring men's work, you know, that they're likely come across those at some point. That was really part of the DNA of what became known as the mythopoetic men's movement. Also alongside the book Iron John, which was sort of taking an old story from the Grimm's brothers that Robert Bly, the poet, and in many ways seen as the father of the mythopoetic men's movement, brought forth in a book that came out in the early 90s and really kickstarted a big flourishing of this initial wave. And that's also part of what we use. We bring in these mythic structures. Now, in terms of those quadrants, King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, having done a fair amount of men's work myself, it is the realm of the lover that actually has gotten the least amount of space. Mm. Like I've gone to weekends where, you know, the warrior gets a lot of airtime, you know, the king, how to be a king, and even the magician, right? But the lover, it just seems like it wasn't really given the attention and the care and the focus that is actually required to access and integrate so much of these qualities, which, again, when you hear lover, unless you have a sense of the archetypal realms, you might say, oh, okay, again, does this relate to sex? And I mean, yes, it includes sex, but also the lover, as we understand it, is, again, the capacity for a man to be essentially in love with life itself and to access Eros, like we talked about, this to become a channel and a conduit and one who can, in some ways, free a kind of consumptive focus on Eros and sex, primarily if we're talking about heterosexual relationships, to free it from accessing only through women. Right, because that's also a pattern that shows up a lot, that men are sort of conditioned into, okay, well, that I can only experience this in relation to a woman and sex with a woman. And that creates a kind of dependency, right? A kind of consumptive, hungry ghost element that a lot of men maybe experience but aren't quite sure how to liberate themselves from. And so I think this is also part of this redirection by reopening the aperture, actually, of the erotic realm and come into, again, these capacities of, you know, courtship and to behold, you know, to really tap that deeper well of, again, you might call it the feminine source as well, but this is a lot of the stuff that we really bring the men through in the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lover archetype is really about being in right relationship, because we are in intimate contact with everything around us, people, nature, but also ourselves, and all of these energies live inside of us. Archetypal energies are universal blueprints that actually exist within every particle, every cell, every individual in a fractal unfolding. So the microcosm and the macrocosm all contain different iterations of these archetypal forces. And the lover is the archetype that connects them all in a harmonious way. So if we don't pay attention to and cultivate the lover archetype, it's really easy to fall out of balance in any of those other archetypes. And like what you were touching on, there's so much emphasis on the king and the warrior, because men really want to be like this really strong, powerful presence. But if they haven't integrated how to be in right relationship with the forces that they're coming into contact with, that they're protecting, that they're advocating for, the passion or the projects that they're building, then we can very quickly slip into a place that's consumptive, destructive, oppressive, and we see that playing out in our world all over the place. But the benefit of cultivating the lover archetype is it actually unifies us with life-affirming ways of relating to those other archetypal forces. So you step into a place of virtuous warriorship or virtuous kingship. The king archetype, just as a very quick example, is... when it's unbalanced, it often turns into the tyrant. It's asserting power over, versus the integrated king is the greatest servant of the kingdom. They're in a position of power, not because they are more powerful than anyone else, but because they are equipped to be of greatest service. And that is really unlocked through the lover archetype of seeing and appreciating and loving all the other aspects of creation as an aspect of self, and what an honor it is to be in service to that. That's fueled and reinforced by the lover archetype, which is what we're learning how to tap into. And it also unleashes a lot of undomesticated energy that carries a lot of power. Like just look at nature, at the power of nature, of the ocean, of storms, of volcanoes, of mountains. You know, there's a power in there that doesn't need to assert itself over anything else. It's innately powerful, just as the lover archetype. And that gives us access to the universal energy of Eros, which is a generative force at its core.
Mm-hmm. You know, it strikes me too, there's a quote that I'm sure has come from a lot of sources, but Michael Mead has used it as well. He's one of the initial triad of the mythopoetic men's movement. But he says, never give a sword to a man who can't dance. And it's such a good capture of exactly that, right? Like a warrior who has no access to the lover to tap into the ecstasy of dance, the sensual movement of dance, right, shouldn't be given a weapon, because they're going to lack that sense of deeper connection to right relationship, as you said. Now, other territory that we also touch on, of course, is through this exploration, of course, men will access places in which they're blocked or which they're wounded, in which they're experienced conditioning or shame around this, you know, sort of original erotic awakening or the oncomingness that they experience, you know, with puberty, especially that oftentimes in this culture, again, that men are shamed for or, you know, has been unconsciously used to trespass or to create harm. And so part of that, this foundational exploration is to return to those places that actually need, you know, consciousness, awareness, repatterning around, you know, what has happened in the past so that it can access these more vital places of more integrated, and I would call it like an inherent nobility in a way of that is like the birthright of every man and every human.
Yeah, there's something to be said about learning how to feel and learning how to express and some of the things that bind that or contain that within us, especially in sexual and erotic territory, is fear, guilt, and shame. So we hide all of these aspects of ourselves because we are rejecting those sides of us. And we've learned that from society, from family, from our culture. And this whole territory has been wrapped up with intense shame. And so we hide it. And then it shows up in shadow expressions through addictions like pornography or the consumptive behaviors that we've been speaking to a little bit of needing to take from others or force them or manipulate them so that we can get what we want. That's all a consequence of relegating these essential parts of ourselves to the shadow or demonizing it, judging it, criticizing it, being afraid of it. So I like to refer to this territory as the forbidden topic. It's something that you and I have been saying quite a bit through these few retreats, because there's not very many spaces that we can go to have honest conversations about erotic energy and these hidden desires, these hidden fantasies and how we relate to them. And if we can't even have conversations about them, how can we cultivate a mature relationship to that energy? So we need to learn together how to de-armor in a safe and supportive way so that we can bring those feelings to the surface so that they can be seen and heard and felt and moved through. And this is one of the big principles of psychotherapeutic work is these pains, these wounds that we're carrying from the past, they don't just disappear. They actually have to pass through us. And that doesn't happen in isolation. That happens in direct contact with others. That happens through relationship. So this territory is very scary for a lot of people because there's a lot of shame and fear. But that's also where the healing is. It's why we have to come together as men in solidarity to have honest explorations of these really rich and vibrant territories to reclaim that which has been lost.
Well, that may be enough to whet the appetite of interested men. The next immersion weekend that we're speaking to now, Awakening the Wild Erotic, will be April 5th to 7th. This will be in the Black Creek, Comox Valley area, which is on Vancouver Island. It's about 3 hours north of Victoria. Beautiful, beautiful area. It'll be at a private land, a gorgeous gathering space on our friend's property and bested in nature. There'll be a chef that'll be cooking beautiful meals every day. And yeah, it's going to be really fantastic to gather with men in this way.
Mm. Yeah. And then we also have a special online offering, which we're really excited to speak about for those who aren't in the area, called the Deep Masculine. Because this is really rich and very deep territory. And there's a lot of depth that you can access through a weekend experience. And we're also recognizing that, you know, there's a lot that you can carve out over an extended period of time. And we want to make that available for as many men as we can in with more support, with more community, and come together as a global community to have this conversation.
Mm. And I could say a few words now. So this is a 3-month initial program, as we named the Deep Masculine. And this title actually was inspired by a conversation and a reading from a book, which is called Beyond the Hero. This was a collection of myths that was done by an author, Alan B. Chinnan. You can catch the interview I did with him. I'll put it in the show notes. Again, it's called Before the Patriarch, the Trickster. And in that book, what he initially talks about is this idea that, you know, men grew up with a kind of, a need to experience, to learn from, and to access the initial masculinity, which is in large, many ways, an adolescent experience, you know, as a man grows into adulthood. But also there's this, he calls it a fear and fascination with the feminine, right? Which is, again, I think a lot of men are in this stage, which is that a lot of the men's work over the last few decades, and especially now in the Renaissance, is really looking to access what, you know, has been deemed kind of accessing their feminine, right? For a man to access his feminine. And, you know, it's interesting to track the historical and contemporary sort of resistance to this, right? Because some men will say, you know, men don't need to be more feminine. They need to be more masculine. And this kind of feminization of men, often captured in the term snag, right? Sensitive new age guy, which you might have heard. It what happens is it feels like it can rob men, again, of a masculine potency if they sort of drift too far into their feminine. And then they lack a kind of discipline that then women, if we're talking about that pairing, is like they need men to be more masculine. So for me, that gets a bit lost in the sense that absolutely there needs to be this integration of the feminine realm and the feminine source, which is a lot of what we're talking about here in the Awakening the Wild Erotic. But like the author says that I named, he says, beyond this fear and fascination with the feminine, there lies something further, which he calls the deep masculine. And so that's actually where the inspiration like this came from, to move beyond again and to give more space to the archetypal realm, to look at a number of other sources that I've been tracking over the last few years in terms of discernment of men's relationship to this vaster territory, as well as Deus bringing a lot of his medicine with somatic practices, integration exercises, mixed with group coaching calls, and like Deus said, a community of men that are along this journey for this 3 months. And so we're very excited that this is going to be on offer. We spent the last few months ourselves really going deep and, you know, recording lessons and developing the course material. And yeah, it's going to be really great.
Mm-hmm. And again, combining different psychotherapeutic investigations, conscious kink practices, fantasy, we touch on addiction, pornography use, and all the while weaving this beautiful tapestry of archetypes and myth to give us access points to go into these spaces in personal, but also impersonal ways, in really unique explorations. And very quickly, one of the challenges that can show up for a lot of men in diving into this territory, using language such as masculine and feminine, is that those terms are very gendered. And that has a lot of consequences of men who want to step into more of their masculinity, kind of shunning femininity or feminine energy. But as we start to dive into body-centered explorations, what we discover is that the masculine and the feminine forces are actually mutually supportive. They liberate one another when they're properly integrated. And the feminine is feeling. It's energy. It's a certain kind of power that gives you the ability to create. It's creative energy. And the masculine is the directionality. It's the thing that actually guides that energy into a functional expression. So if we have one but not the other, it can create chaos in our lives. And by diving into each of the individual energies within our own body and then having the map of archetypes, it really unites this esoteric space and this extremely practical body-centered exploration that has day-to-day implications, direct effect on your relationships, on your feelings, on your body, on your energy levels. And so we're not just dwelling in this airy-fairy hypothetical space. We're drawing it into practical applications because that's where real transformation happens.
So once again, that is the Deep Masculine 3-month journey for men, which is available to men all over the world, which you can access on the website, themythicmasculine.com. as well as get info for Awakening the Wild Erotic that was named earlier. And yeah, reach out if you have questions around either of these offerings. The application form is there up for both of them as well. And give yourself a bit of time to go through the application, which is also part of the approach, right? One thing that we've said to the men in the other events is, you know, ceremony and ritual really happens as soon as you decide to engage. You know, it happens long before you, quote, arrive, you know, at the event itself. And so, again, part of that awareness and consciousness and space that you give, even to the application form, is also part of the ritual.
So once you fill out the application, the next step is to hop on a consultation call where we dive deep into some of the things that we're speaking very briefly about in this very short conversation to answer any questions that you have, to give you a sense of some of the more specific, edgier practices that we're going to be exploring that we can't necessarily put out in these public spaces. And if that's intriguing for you, I highly recommend that you go through the application process to see if it's a good fit, because these experiences aren't for everyone. And it's important to have direct connection and contact and conversations about this to see if it's a good fit for you. And we're here to support you every step of the way through that intake process.
Okay, I think that's it for now. Covered the bases, announced the events. And so, yeah, if this calls to you in any way, please feel free to take the next step, and we'll hear from you soon.